Welcome into You're the Cure right here on AM 580 with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, with Veritas Medical right here in Lubbock. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com, all one word. And our telephone number at the clinic, 1-855-6-VERITAS. Yes, back at it once again. Of course, along the way, if you have any questions, 745-5800, 745-5800. You can also text in your questions to 806-745-5800 as well. Let me say good morning once again to Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Wade. How are you?
I'm doing well, doing well. Glad to see you back here on Monday. We had a great show last week. Nobody was here because it was MLK Day. And, right. Of course, you and I, and we had a special guest on the show last week. Guthrie. Yes.
And he will be back next week. We only got to about half of what we wanted to get to. So Nelson Coulter, for those of you who were listening last week.
That was a great show.
He was a former superintendent out at Guthrie Common School District, and he kind of gave his story of how he transformed his personal health, and then it transformed the whole school, his staff and his students. But next week we'll get into more of what he's doing currently in retirement with permaculture.
Right. So fantastic. I look forward to it. We have a special guest live in studio with us today, and that's Christine Stewart. She's a certified nurse, midwife. Of course, Melody Wilkes, the health coach, here with us as well. Good morning, Christine and Melody. Good to see both of you with Dr. Edwards and me. Glad to have y'all on the show today, and I'm sure this is going to be interesting because being a certified nurse midwife, Christine, that's pretty cool stuff. I thought, really? That's something new as far as I'm concerned about how all that works, but we're going to get into it and explore that today on the program. But so what do you want to talk about, Dr. Edwards? I'll let you start firing off the questions first, and then we'll kind of go around the table or however you want to do it.
Okay. Well, as everyone knows, I'm a firm believer in the fact that God created our bodies perfectly and so intricately designed, and the body knows just what to do and how to do things on its own to stay well and fit and healthy. I believe everybody should just die in their sleep of old age, not on any medications and not in a nursing home, and with all their physical and mental faculties still in check. And kind of along that lines, life begins, obviously, at conception, although science kind of is talking about how even preconception, you can influence someone's health throughout their life. And if you think about this, you know, sperm and an egg, that egg that's in the mama is actually formed in the mama when the mama's in the womb of her mama. So let's trace that. So for me, the egg that I was made from my mom, was actually formed in my mom when she was in my grandmother.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
So the influence of my grandmother, of her nutrition, her lifestyle, her stressors, even her thoughts, as Dr. Bruce Lipton explains, you know, impacts the genetics of that egg that was put into my mom's ovary when my mom was in the womb of my grandmother.
Wow.
And then you bring that all the way forward. My mom's health, obviously, impacted by her diet and lifestyle and her thoughts. And the time where I'm actually in my mother's womb, obviously, impacts my health. But a woman's health is so important partly because of this fact. I mean, she's carrying these eggs of the future generations. So women's health is something that's very important to me. People think about, maybe they don't think about midwives as part of women's health, because midwives aren't super common out here in West Texas, in Lubbock in particular, in the medical community, but they are available, and that's one reason we have Christine here today to talk about that and just to explain what midwifery is and what are the benefits
midwifery?
Of that. Midwifery?
That's
that's a new vocabulary for you, Wade.
It is.
And probably most of our listeners.
Midwifery.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I don't want to ramble too long. I want to get Christine Stewart here, but let me intro Christine. I'll let her tell her story, but a brief intro here. Christine's been a nurse midwife since 2006. She's been a woman's health nurse practitioner since 2003, and also a registered nurse for the past 17 years. Originally called to women's health due to her mother's development of breast cancer when Christine was only 12 years old, and her mom was 36 at the time. She eventually came to be further called into the midwife profession in order to support women in a healthy pregnancy, labor, and birth, which I'll remind everybody, women have been birthing babies for thousands of years without any medical doctors involved. Christine completed her doctorate in nursing almost 2 years ago, and she also served as the Texas Tech Health Science Center's nurse midwife program director for several years. But wanting to get back to a more client-centered focus, she returned to full practice about a year ago. Previous to this, she was able to become the first certified nurse midwife to secure hospital privileges in Lubbock in 2014, which is a very difficult thing to do in a very traditional and conventional medical community, that midwives can have a hard time breaking into the hospital setting. But Christine was able to do that. Ultimately, just as the meaning of midwife is with woman, Christine feels called to serve in this capacity for full scope of reproductive health care for women, and with a focus on prenatal care, labor, and birth. So that's a brief intro for Christine. But let me also just throw in, before we get into Christine telling us about herself, when I was training in residency in Waco at Waco Family Practice, the reason I picked Waco, they had no other competing residency programs, which means the family practice residents were the only trainees in town. As opposed to, say, here in Lubbock, you have family practice residents, surgery residents, pediatrician residents, OBGYN, et cetera, et cetera. So in Waco, when there was a baby to be delivered, they called us, the family practice guys, or if there was a surgery or there whatever, we got to kind of learn every specialty. But the primary trainer that I had during residency on my OBGYN rotations, the one that helped me learn the most about how to take care of women and specifically deliver babies, was a midwife. So I have great respect for these midwives, and I've learned a lot from midwives throughout my career. So anyways, there's an intro. Christine, welcome to the show. I'd kind of like to start with just you telling us a little bit of your story, your journey, how you got to where you are today, so our listeners kind of have your background.
All righty. Well, thank you. It's good to be here. A lot of what you have said is kind of the basis of what my journey was. Actually, when I was 7 years old, I remember thinking that I wanted to grow up and deliver babies. And at that time, I thought that what I wanted to be was an OB, because I'd never heard of a midwife. I didn't know what it was. But as I was growing up, and I had the unfortunate event of my mother developing breast cancer when I was just 12, you know, I began to take a step back, and, you know, just things started ringing in my head about what I was going to do with my life. And I felt like I really was kind of called towards the spectrum for women's health care. And fortunately, she did go into remission. I'm glad that I did not lose her when I was just 12 years old. But as I went on to nursing school and then went on for an advanced practice degree, I was in Dallas and I got into the Women's Health Nurse Practitioner program. It was out at Texas Women's University, and they trained out at Parkland Hospital. And I met my husband about that same time, and he was actually in medical school. And interestingly, Parkland Hospital had the largest midwifery service in the United States, as well as the most births per day. I mean, they would deliver like about 40 babies per day. And wow. He said the same thing. I mean, some of the best things that, you know, he doesn't like OB. He doesn't like maternity care as much. I mean, you know, we all get called to different areas, but he did say that what he learned the most from was from the nurse midwives there. And when I got into the Women's Health Nurse Practitioner program, I knew almost like the second week I was in it, I was not in the best program for me. But just due to time constraints, and we had a new baby and we were going to be finishing his training and relocating for residency, I just, you know, prayed that maybe one day I would be able to go back and get a postmaster's. And well, lo and behold, we ended up in Denver. So 2 years later, I was able to go back and get my postmaster's degree to become a nurse midwife as well. And, you know, what the misconception is, and kind of even what you had said, Wade, in the beginning was, oh, CNM, a new thing. But that's just it. It's not a new thing.
Right.
I mean, it's been around for hundreds of years.
Right.
Hundreds of years.
Right. And, but it was also the fact that, like Dr. Edwards alluded to, in traditional medicine, we don't hear about that much anymore.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate because actually nurse midwives were pretty integral to the birth of, you know, no pun intended, but of the obstetric line of work. And when the first midwives came over actually from the old country, from England, back in the 1700s, 1800s, and that's how midwifery came to the United States, around that same time in England as well, OBs started forming around the late, I think it was late 19th century, like 1850s, 1860s or so. And they began to see it more as what originally was just normal childbirth, just, you know, birth was birth. It became more kind of like a business. And eventually, just over the next couple of decades, even though midwives actually helped train some of the doctors to begin with, midwifery kind of phased out. There was, as birth moved into the hospital with the advent of anesthesia and spinal anesthetics, which requires you to be in the hospital. I mean, you need access to an OR, you know, for just things that can go wrong when you have anesthesia. And there just was lack of regulation and access for healthcare for midwives at the time. But midwives and nurse midwives have been around for a really long time. And there's also a difference between different types of midwives, and that's a big misconception as well. And so what I am, I'm a nurse midwife. And what that means is I had to be an RN first. I had to go to a four-year nursing program. And now, as of 2007, nurse midwives have to have a master's to be able to practice in the United States. And so I have prescriptive authority. I can scrub in for C-sections. Not only do nurse midwives do the focus of prenatal health care, labor, birth, and then also newborn care for the first 28 days for normal newborn care. Our scope also includes gynecologic care, reproductive health care for any female that's reproductive aged all the way to the grave. And that also includes now a broadened scope of primary health care for women. So eye, ears, nose, throat, diabetes, you know, within moderation. I mean, of course, if someone's really having issues going on, then of course we're going to refer to a specialist and have them follow up with a higher level of care. But nurse midwives are considered independent providers, and that's a federal designation. So there's also licensed midwives, which I've got a lot of really good friends that actually are licensed midwives. They go by a different route of training to where they do more of an apprenticeship training, and they did answer to the Texas Department of State Health Services that has since transferred over in about the last year to the Texas Department of Regulatory Licensing, I believe. And so they sit for different boards, and their scope is just around prenatal care, labor, birth, and then newborn care for actually the first 6 weeks of life. But they don't get hospital privileges. They primarily work some in birth centers, but then also a large majority work in the home birth realm. So,
well, let me ask this. What would be, for people listening out there in radio land, what would be the advantages of, say, having you there as opposed to an OBGYN who, you know, we have three kids? But that's what we used, OBGYN doctor. And, of course, you go in, you do the sonograms. They tell you, oh, do you want to know what sex it is, the baby? And you go through all these things. And so what would be the advantages of having a midwife as opposed to just going the traditional route that most people take nowadays through doctor clinics and hospitals?
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, and I know a lot of really good OBs. I mean, I'm not here to bash anybody or anybody's better.
That.
You know, yeah. And there's, you know, there's a time and a place for everything. But the benefit of having a midwife or a nurse midwife for your care is, I mean, it's just several fold. You can ask anybody that's been a client of a midwife, and I, you know, 95%, 99% of the time, they're going to say the level of care and education and support that they get from midwives is unsurpassed. And what is found that when you get care like that, a lot of the complications and issues that can occur with health or can occur with pregnancy, they seem to fade away, or they don't form in the first place. And So the benefit of being with a nurse midwife for care or a midwife for care is that you're going to get unsurpassed one-on-one care and attention that typically the OBs don't have time for. I mean, they're seeing so
right.
many people. Mm-hmm. And part of that's just, you know, that's just a fallacy of the way that our system is set up, our healthcare system. And, you know, that's a different topic of discussion. But
so let me just say this. It's very similar to what we talk a lot about on this program, is that you take the time to make sure that the baby from start to finish, and even after, you know, say the finish part after birth, mm-hmm. continues on a healthy track. Whereas in a lot of cases, like we see within the medical business industry, if you will, now, doc in the box, that kind of deal. People go in and it's this and here's a drug and okay, thanks a lot. We go on to somebody else. Whereas you, on the other hand, are walking us through this process as a family unit, as the mother and the baby, and helping to nurture that situation, as opposed to the doc in the box idea where, hey, I've got an upper respiratory infection, give me a drug and move on down the road.
Yes.
I mean, is it similar in nature? I mean, to put it in that, for a lot of people who understand that, you know, they go to a concierge practice for a doctor like Dr. Edwards mm-hmm. or whatever the case may be, that can actually take the time necessary to make sure your baby's truly healthy from start to finish, as opposed to, hey, you're in the hospital and good luck to you and hopefully everything works out. I mean, would that be a fair assessment, I guess?
Well, midwife care is family-based. It's family-based. It sees pregnancy as a physiologic event. And that's not to say, you know, not everybody is a candidate for midwifery care or for out-of-hospital birth care. I mean, that as long as you're having a healthy pregnancy and you don't have any major health issues going into the pregnancy, then most women are candidates for nurse midwife care or midwife care. And when you take a physiologic approach to it, yes, you need to be trained and to be able to recognize deviations from normal and to be able to recognize the complications. And at that point in time, then a midwife will either collaborate or co-manage a patient or client's care with the physician, or sometimes it is warranted for care to be completely referred on to a physician.
Okay. We do have a text coming in. This is for Dr. Edwards. I guess you can briefly answer this question. It says, been reading about and practicing intermittent fasting 2 times a week with caloric restriction, 500 for women, 600 for men on those days. Would love to hear Dr. Edwards talk more about this. It's been very tough but very effective. I'm slightly underweight, so probably need to modify. I eat a nearly perfect wheat belly diet the rest of the time. Do you want to quickly take on that question when we can get back to Christina?
So the question is, that he's just having a tough time? Is that what he said?
Yeah, it says, would love to. Okay, yeah, it says, I've been reading about and practicing intermittent fasting 2 times a week with caloric restriction, uh-huh. 500 for women, 600 for men on those days.
Ooh.
Would love to hear Dr. Edwards talk more about this.
Okay.
It's been tough but very effective. I'm slightly underweight, so probably need to modify.
Yeah.
Okay, so there you go.
I would say no, don't do caloric restriction.
Okay.
The way intermittent fasting works and the reason it's beneficial, it's not that you're restricting your calorie intake, it's you're restricting the time. So basically, it's not how much you eat, it's how often you eat. You want to get 18 hours of no calories going in, but in those 4 to 6 hours where you are eating, you want to eat, you want to feast, you want to get your calories in. So probably he's going down into starvation mode, I would say, a little bit.
Which is not good.
No, not good. So I would try to keep your calories up. Now, Dr. Jason Fung would say it doesn't matter at all about calories. All that matters is that you don't spike your insulin. When you are eating, eat foods that are low glycemic, that aren't spiking insulin, which would be healthy fats and
right.
vegetables, green leafies, proteins. But there's so many different ways to do intermittent fasting. I was reading last week, doing bulletproof coffee twice a day for 6 days, and on the 7th day, just pig out, basically a feast day. And then you go 6 days of bulletproof twice a day. That's one version. And really, you can go a lot of different ways with it. But in that comment, I would just say, don't restrict your calories. You need to eat. when you are eating. You need to get your calories in.
I think another thing real quick, and we'll get back to Christine here on the show, but what I find kind of also interesting, it says that I'm slightly underweight, so probably need to modify. If you're slightly underweight, do you need to fast?
Your body should stabilize at the desired weight it wants to be at as long as you're eating. Even an intermittent fast is okay. I mean, intermittent fasting is very, very healthy.
Okay.
It's beneficial for your health
no
matter what.
So it's not just a weight loss deal.
Correct. I mean, everybody should be doing this.
Okay.
If someone's trying to maintain a certain amount of muscle mass, then doing some weight training at the end of the fast, so just as you're coming out of your fast, hit the weights. Because your growth hormone is at its peak at that time, and so as well as testosterone, so you'll add more muscle mass at that point. So just do some interval training with weight-bearing exercise if you want to try to maintain that muscle mass.
Okay.
One thing I want to point out, kind of implicate doctors here, and I think we need to talk about this. When doctors get too involved in natural in the body's natural abilities to heal itself, you know, things can go south quickly. Back in the mid-1800s, there was a Hungarian doctor, I'll probably butcher his name, Ignaz Semmelweis. But basically, this doctor was studying the question of why are so many women dying of during childbirth. I think they call it childbirth fever. And so he studied at this one hospital. There are two different wards. You could give birth with a medical doctor on the medical doctor ward, or you could give birth with a female midwife on the midwife ward. And what he noticed was that the death rate was 5 times greater on the doctor's ward. Mm-hmm. And he was looking at all the differences between the midwives and the doctors. Like in the midwife's ward, they were giving, the women gave birth laying on their side. On the doctor's ward, the ladies were laying on their back. So he kind of studied that, and it turned out that didn't make a difference in the death rate. But bottom line, what he figured out was the doctors weren't washing their hands. They were coming upstairs from the surgery ward or the gross anatomy lab or wherever they were, and just coming right in and delivering these babies without washing their hands. So,
and what year was this?
1846.
That's amazing. So they knew about germs back then? I guess so, huh?
Well,
they weren't washing their
This was an observation that he just guessed.
Oh, okay.
He didn't know what it was, that
oh,
there was transference of something.
Yeah, okay.
But he was still ridiculed, and it took years to actually get this theory of his into mainstream, to get all the doctors to recognize it.
I see.
I mean, these women, I think it was like a 20% death rate or something. Ooh. It was awful. And I mean, that sounds so old and barbaric and crazy that they wouldn't even know to wash their hands. But the point I'm trying to make is there's traditions that have been passed down for hundreds of years, thousands, probably generation after generation after generation, through these women that were with other women during childbirth, which is what, like I said earlier, midwife means, is with woman.
Mm-hmm.
And now we officially designate them as midwives, but there are these traditions and understandings and practices that were just passed down. And the biggest one being that this is just a natural process. There are natural hormones that get released by the fetus, by the mom, that prepare the womb, prepare the cervix, prepare the ligaments and the pelvis, and prepare the whole process. There's hormones that relax the ligaments, hormones that relax the cervix, hormones that induce the womb to start to contract properly. And in fact, I read one article where it showed that it's the fetal brain that releases chemicals to trigger mom's labor to start. So when you get in the way of this process, you jump in there and you start micromanaging, and you try to induce a baby earlier, just whatever, use synthetic Pitocin to start labor. There's a lot of potential risk involved there. One being an increased rate of C-section. And we've talked about C-section before on this show. You know, a baby gets its probiotic flora from mama. And we've gone over and over and over how important your gut bacteria are. But where you get it from is from your mom. And studies show that babies that are born cesarean, their colon is colonized with hospital bacteria. The average bacteria of hospital workers' skin flora. So the bacteria that's in the hospital or on the skin of hospital workers is what colonizes the fetal GI tract of a C-section baby.
That's Maddie and Emma, Wade.
Yeah, and that's scary, especially in light of a story that was breaking last week about this super bug that this lady died from in, I think it was in Alaska, and they threw every known antibiotic at her, and she didn't make it.
Yeah.
And it's really had a ripple effect in the CDC right now because of the fact we overprescribe antibiotics, and the CDC has been telling us for years that these super bugs are going to get out of control if we don't do something.
Yeah, and it's a combination of the resistance from the overprescription of antibiotics, most of which is in the agricultural industry, but it's combined with a deficient immune system. I mean, these bugs have been around forever and ever, and a highly functional immune system will take care of these bugs where you don't have to worry about it.
Well, you can tell, because we have three kids. Two of them were C-section. One of them was vaginal. Catherine was vaginal. I don't want to say she's way healthier, but Maddie has a lot of allergy issues.
Yeah.
And we're constantly working on her, you know. She can't swallow pills, so it's kind of a challenge sometimes to do probiotics. You have to do the food stuff, but...
Right. Well, and 80% of the immune system resides in the gut. That's the connection here between this superbug. The bacteria in our gut make antimicrobial peptides. They make antiviral, antiparasitical chemicals. And they talk to your immune system, your white blood cells that reside right inside the lining of your gut. 80% of your white blood cells are made there. So there's this huge interaction between the immune system, the gut flora, but the gut flora comes from mama and also from breastfeeding. But the increased cesarean rate that you see in countries that have more obstetricians coming in and kind of micromanaging and jumping in the middle of a natural birth process, that's the problem, in my opinion. Maybe Christine, I don't know all the stats on this, but she might can speak to a little bit of... in England and some of the other European countries, I think midwives are more commonly used, and I think the rates of complications such as C-section are much less.
Yeah, and a lot of the European countries, in fact, the majority of them, midwives do the majority of births. They do almost 70-75% of the births. And
Wow. What's
really disgraceful is the United States is absolute last in industrialized nations as far as infant mortality is concerned. And so here, on the one hand, our healthcare system and industry, billions are spent on healthcare, yet we rank absolutely dead square last. And that's including all industrialized nations and unindustrialized nations. I mean, some of the places that they have better birth outcomes for babies' mortality rates than what we have here in the States. And we really need to take a step back and ask why. I mean, because that's not acceptable. I mean, are we a country that wants to be represented by that? I mean, and, you know, just even all this stuff with gut flora and nutrition. And while I wouldn't recommend fasting in pregnancy, you know, you can get back to that postpartum. But there has been so much come out in the research, even just in the last 5 and 10 years, of the whole field of epigenetics, which is just kind of a fancy term for going back to what Dr. Ben was saying about babies' outcomes and health are starting to be programmed back even from at the time of their grandmother. There's a presentation called "You Are What Your Mother Ate." You are what your grandmother ate, and that it's so imperative, the nutrition that is assumed during pregnancy and even preconception, getting ready for getting pregnant. And the reality is in the United States, over half of pregnancies are unintended. So
about
52%.
That's big.
Wow.
Yes. And so by the time somebody realizes that they're pregnant, one, the neural tubes have already closed. That's the whole rationale for taking folic acid and helping to prevent neural tube defects. And also, women's nutrition is not up to par just with the way that a lot of the way we eat now.
And let me ask you, Christine, how does the male sperm play anything in this role? As far as, say, you got a mom that's doing everything totally appropriate, you've looked at her, she's doing well, but I mean, say they hadn't, they're doing the family planning bit, but what about the male? What if he's just a couch potato, just a, you know, he's just not healthy? Does that play a role at all?
You know, I mean, I don't know the exact research on it, but I would venture to say that what is found in the study of epigenetics is, you know, we are given a certain set of genes, and what happens is environmental factors and other factors and influences tend to change the expression of these genes, and that's what is said that, like, during pregnancy, a mom can reprogram her baby's metabolism either for better or for worse depending on how she is eating and taking care of herself in the pregnancy, how much overall gestational or pregnancy weight gain there is. So I would venture to say that a man can be, yeah, I mean, they're reprogramming their genes as well. And
yeah, sure.
I've seen studies where even going back to the great-grandfather, through the line of the sperm, genes are turned on or turned off, which is what Christine's talking about with epigenetics.
Which, again, the sperm is half of the equation.
Right. So there are certain genes turned on and off because of these diet and lifestyle things. The stressors and nutrients, the, you know, different hormone influences. So definitely there's an impact. You know, Christine, you were telling me one day about just weight gain in the mothers. If you do group visits with a midwife or something like that, and even here locally, I think at a clinic you were talking about that.
Well, that's the group prenatal care design, and what it was, I was involved in one of Texas Tech's clinics over here, the Combest Center, which is an amazing center for offering midwifery care for patients. And we helped start a prenatal practice there a couple years ago, and they were granted a
given a grant.
Well, it was a grant. They received funding for centering pregnancy group prenatal care. And what it is, and countries all over the world do this, and it's middle class and prominent women even that are wanting to be in these group prenatal care, because what it is women around the similar gestational ages come together, and there's a, you know, they see the provider momentarily in private off to the side to get like the measurements and blood pressure and fetal heart tones. And then everybody circles up and talks about a common topic, and questions are answered, and it gives women a chance to really fellowship with each other and build support. And what has been statistically proven with this model of prenatal care is that preterm birth goes way down, that gestational weight gain is well within the limits, a lot better, because only 38% of women nationwide gain the amount of weight that they're supposed to be gaining in pregnancy. Most go way overboard. And what happens with that, not only does it lend to baby having an increased rate of obesity in childhood and lifelong, but it increases mom's rate of becoming diabetic, having heart disease, of increasing chances for birth injury for both baby and mom. And with this model of prenatal care, that the instance of excessive gestational weight gain does tend to go down.
But society will preach, Christine, all the time, oh, you're a mom-to-be. Well, it's okay. You
eat
can have bonbons.
But
you can
look
get,
what's
you
happened.
Can gain
yeah.
weight.
Yeah.
It's okay to yeah. be, you know, fat because you're pregnant. Blah blah blah. I mean that again. That's the wrong message, obviously.
Right. And what we found out is it's not okay. It's not okay, and it's going to make it over twice as hard for that woman to get the weight off postpartum. Then, you know, a year, a couple years go down the road, then she's pregnant again, and it just starts snowballing out of control. And they do believe that that's one thing that's lending to this increased obesity in childhood. I mean, of course, the others is a lot of processed foods.
But it doesn't help.
I want to ask something. How long does it take a woman's body to recover between pregnancies? Because I had my girls my first two were less than 2 years apart. I mean, by the time Catherine was one, I was already pregnant.
Ideally, it's good to wait at least 12 months before getting pregnant again, even 18 months if possible, just because mom's body needs to recover. And when that doesn't happen, then subsequent babies do tend to be at a greater risk of preterm birth. So there is a statistical significance for that. And it's hard on your body. It's hard on the mom's body. You need to be able to replenish your stores.
See, I was breastfeeding Catherine still, and I was pregnant with Maddie. And my doctor's like, stop doing that. Yeah. I was like, okay.
Oh, yeah. Wow, okay. Let's go to the phones. Good morning. Welcome to the show. Hello. Have I lost them? I may have lost you. I did. Okay. I'll tell you what, this would be a good time, though, to take a quick break. If you have a question along the way, 745-5800. Stick around, though. We'll be right back with more. Hey, you know, with 2017 here now, if you're looking for healthy alternatives to fast food, wanting to feel good, lose weight, and have more energy, then I suggest Freshy Restaurant, just north of 82nd Street on Milwaukee in the Hub Shopping Center. Excellent salads, wraps, burritos, soups, smoothies, juices, grilled egg pockets, breakfast bowls, breakfast burritos, it's all there. You can eat in, take out, or have it delivered to you. Breakfast, lunch, or dinner. You'll get really healthy food that your body needs. You must come by and learn about how their Mealbox plans will help you achieve optimum health. Visit Freshy today, just north of 82nd Street on Milwaukee Avenue. See our website, freshy.com, or call 319-9678. That's 319-9678. Again, freshy.com, freshii.com, and come by and see us today and have a great meal at Freshy Restaurant. Vitamins Plus is a full-line health food store located inside Drug Emporium on the corner of 82nd Slide Road. Right now, we have a very large selection of natural cold, flu, and allergy remedies. It's that time of year to build up your immunity to help you fight off this year's bugs. If we don't have it in stock, what you're looking for, then we can special order it. Texas owned and operated for over 20 years. Good for you groceries at great for you prices. That's Vitamins Plus inside Drug Emporium, 82nd and Slide Road. Get by and see us today.
Are you experiencing low back pain, neck pain, headaches, or pain as a result of an injury? Then let me introduce you to my chiropractor, Dr. Carla Haddock. Dr. Haddock has been practicing chiropractic care for many years, specializing in diversified treatment, drop table, cold laser therapy, and acupuncture. No expensive treatment plans, and your initial exam is free. If you're looking to improve your health and experience a pain-free lifestyle, then call Dr. Haddock at 239-7190. That's 239-7190. Call for your free initial exam today. Haddock Chiropractic is a proud sponsor of the morning health show, You're the Cure, with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, every Monday morning from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. right here on AM 580 Radio. Haddock Chiropractic, 239-7190.
Listen to your body. It may be telling you it's missing something. When we're missing omega-3s, we can feel run down, stiff, achy, or have a hard time focusing and handling stress. Omega-3s are vastly deficient in the American food supply, and we can't achieve optimal health without them. Nordic Naturals fish oils provide a convenient way to get the omega-3s you need and deliver industry-leading purity, freshness, and taste. Visit Natural Health Market at 4414 82nd Street in the Village Shopping Center.
We're visiting with Dr. Flippin with Exodus New Beginnings. You can always check out the website, exodusnb.com. Go there, check it out. Dr. Flippin, tell us about chelation therapy and why IV chelation therapy is better than oral chelation therapy.
Well, first of all, I'd like to tell you, Wade, about chelation, what it is. And basically, it is an agent that pulls heavy metals out of your body. Heavy metals get stored in your bones and your organs, and so that's what chelation is. Basically, the IV chelation is a lot more effective because you get a higher dose. So the oral chelating agents only have a tenth of the dose of an IV chelation. So you would have to do 10 times more oral chelations, plus the fact that they're only 23% absorbed. So do the math. At 23%, it's 40 times longer.
Oh, yeah. And we all know that we're exposed to environmental toxins and a lot of heavy metals and fillings in our teeth. I mean, we've got it all over the place. And this really helps to combat diseases related to those heavy metals, right?
Exactly. And one of the diseases is coronary artery disease.
Wow, yeah.
The heavy metals actually cause inflammation, which starts the cascade of coronary artery disease.
Be sure to visit the new location at 7711 Woodrow Road. That's 7711 Woodrow Road, or call 863-3903. That's 863-3903. You can always visit the website exodusnb.com.
Welcome back to You're the Cure right here on AM 580 with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Our special guest this morning, Christine Stewart, certified nurse midwife here on the program. And continuing on, Dr. Edwards, lots of good stuff here. Lots of stuff that I did not know about. Every time I think about midwife, I think, oh, that's those ladies or people that go in and you know, they help people have births at home and stuff.
Yeah.
That's about the extent of my knowledge up until today's program.
Yeah. Well, we're trying to open people's minds a little bit to what exactly this is. I mean, Lubbock's, West Texas in general, is kind of a little bit behind the times. We were just talking off air how Dallas-Fort Worth area has over 100 birth centers, and it's very, very popular there. Before we get into that, though, I wanted to jump back to that cesarean rate. You know, about a third of the babies born in America are cesarean, I think. That rate may be a little higher now. It might be 40%. Christine can talk to that, but I want to just reinforce that these babies have an increased risk. Cesarean babies have an increased risk of type 1 diabetes, obesity, and asthma. And I think we'll see in more autoimmune disease, because basically those are autoimmune diseases. Even asthma I consider autoimmune.
And obesity.
Yeah, obesity, for sure. There's an increased risk of obesity. So cesarean, when I say there's a cesarean, people think, oh, no big deal. You just, you know, bring the baby out through the belly instead of the vaginal canal. Well, it is a big deal. There's a lot of things that science hasn't proven, although we're proving more and more, that the baby needs to come through that vaginal canal for a lot of reasons. And there's these increased long-term health consequences if you don't. And the cesarean rates in people that use traditional, conventional obstetricians and the care that we're trained to give from medical school, the rates are at least 33, if not 40%.
Will you, sorry to interrupt you, but will you mention again what we talked about during the break, that if you do have to have your baby cesarean, that you can do the vaginal swabbing?
Yeah, there's a process that you can request and have done that in the event you need to have a C-section, which even women that end up laboring and attempting to deliver at birth centers, the transfer rate is about 9%. And so there are times when a C-section is warranted. And I mean, just as an aside, I had my three children C-section. I was in a really bad car accident, and it rendered me unable to try the other route. But there is a process that you can request that in the event that you're having a C-section, either planned or unplanned, and it's called vaginal seeding. And it's where there is a swab taken of the mother's flora from the birth canal, and it is seeded or essentially wiped to the infant's mucous membranes and allowed to start colonizing. And they've shown that that's actually pretty helpful for making up for not being able to go through the birth canal. Now, you know, nothing's as good as the actual event of a vaginal birth, but that is the, you know, the next best thing to have done.
Christine, share with us, for those listeners who might be interested in utilizing a midwife, what are the options here in Lubbock, and specifically with you, what would a visit look like? What would the whole 9 months look like? What would the birthing process look like? Kind of walk through that for our listeners.
Well, I have geared back more towards really 100% client focused care. I mean, I was involved for quite a number of years with the academic side of things and administrative side of things, but I just really felt drawn to really go back to the patient side. And as I was able to, you know, graciously get hospital privileges in 2014, I've always had a propensity and a a strong drawing towards out-of-hospital birth. And I was able to work with the birth center out in Dallas for 3 years, and I do go back there here and there and help her out. But once you're able to see birth when it's in its element, and oftentimes this is when it's out of hospital. And again, not every single person's a candidate for it. I mean, we're talking about healthy, low-risk pregnancies, and women have to be mentally prepared to be able to face birth unassisted, as far as like
there's no epidurals.
There's not epidurals. There's not anesthetics. There's other modalities. But with that being said,
How do you mentally prepare yourself for that?
Well, I mean,
I'm just thinking
a lot of there's a whole phenomenon called the fear, tension, pain cycle, and Dr. Dickey Reed did a lot of work on this. And the philosophy is you know, birth is primitive. I mean, when a woman is going into birth, and this is with other animals in nature, I mean, you need to be able to go back, get out of your forebrain, and go back and get into your more primitive brain state. And when you're having to carry on conversations or answer a million admit questions or carry on conversations, that's very hard to go back into your primitive brain state. And a lot of what we have done as a disservice in this country is ramp up birth to be a sickness and an issue. And we essentially put a lot of fear into women. And that's not to say, I mean, I think the statistic is that 6% of women don't have any pain with contractions or with childbirth. So, I mean, that's 6%. That means 94% are going to have some discomfort. But
sure,
what is found is when you can get away from the fearfulness of it and the thinking mode of during labor and be able to relax back into the more primitive state, women, I mean, if you've seen an out-of-hospital birth, I mean, it can just go lickety-split. And
wow.
Well, what about the whole idea about the position? You know, we've heard a lot lately about, you know, a woman sitting like I am, upright, having birth, as opposed to laying down. And how much does Lamaze,
all you have to do is just common sense. Do you think that laying flat on your back would be as effective as being in a sitting position?
No, not
exactly.
At all.
So
and you can't breathe.
Why did we take common
on your
sense
back
out of it?
Yeah,
like,
that's a great question.
Common sense is not allowed.
That's one of my catchphrases. Actually, it's even on my business card. Put common sense back into birth. I mean, the effectiveness and the progression of labor takes place when a woman is able to change positions, to move freely, to, if she has the option and the ability to relax in water. It takes away a lot of the pain and discomfort from contractions, and labor often goes much quicker. There's a rumor that the whole thing with stirrups and being in the lithotomy position started from, I think it was like King Louis XIV, and I don't want to butcher history, but he wanted to witness his all of his illegitimate children being born, watch his mistresses giving birth. And so it was his front row seat to watch childbirth.
Gosh.
So that's how the advent of that came about. And so when you are able to get women up off their backs and get them to be able to move around, the body just naturally does what it needs to do, and baby's able to shimmy on out and assume the most ideal position for birth. And again, I mean, I'm not a Nazi against bashing women for getting epidurals, because if you're not mentally prepared and take some time to research how childbirth is and try to get away from the whole fear phenomenon, then honestly, most women are victims of the way that it is. We scare everybody into it.
I can remember giving birth to Catherine. I was right before, and there was some lady a few rooms down that was screaming, and I looked at my sister-in-law and I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Like, well, it was just so disturbing for me.
And it's so
because
busy
as the
in
husband,
there.
You know, we're over there at Covenant and we're in one of the birthing rooms, and of course Catherine was coming and she'd gone back in the vaginal canal and then came back out, and there was a lot of ripping and tearing going on, like a level mm-hmm. 4 top tear.
Yeah.
And it was in the summertime and I was wearing shorts and white tennis shoes, and I had a little gown on, but that didn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And what really freaked me out by the whole experience was the fact there was so much blood. I've never, You know, I've been in combat with the United States military. You know, I've seen a lot of crazy things in my life. But that one was one of those situations where I'll never forget of just how messy that got. And I remember the OBGYN at the time, she didn't know it, but I knew it. I could see the look and panic in her face when all this was going on. And she's trying to stitch things up down there. And she turns to me and looks, says, we may have to do a blood transfusion here.
So it sounds it was really a brutal
yeah. situation.
Yeah.
And I thought, man.
I just remember feeling really weak, like so, I could hardly hold her.
Right. And so when the next time around came for our second daughter, and she was turned differently in the OBGYN. Yeah, transfer. And said, hey, you know what, I was like, yeah, C-section all the way. Right. I don't want any part of that. Mm-hmm. That was so difficult to watch. Mm-hmm. You know, quite frankly, it was disturbing.
Well, and most births are not like that, though. It sounds like you probably did have a postpartum hemorrhage, and sometimes women do tear a little more extensively, but honestly, most births are not like that. I mean, they're peaceful. I mean, yeah, mm-hmm. the woman may vocalize some when she has some discomfort, but... It's
such
for
a nice
for the majority,
way to say it.
it just happens. Birth happens. And, you know, what I was going to say was so many women these days are induced. I mean, it's just
a
given. And so it is very hard to get away with not having an epidural when you are given synthetic oxytocin, because the contractions are, you know, some reports say even 100 times stronger than what the body's natural oxytocin elicits. And so I don't fault anybody for getting an epidural in the midst of that. What I do fault is for not allowing women to realize that they even have a choice. That
options.
Options,
right.
Yeah. I mean, most people don't know.
No,
they don't
even think to ask.
Mm-hmm. They don't know what they don't know.
Right.
And they don't know the options and the availability.
Yeah, and part of that preparatory phase from the fetal brain triggering the mom's oxytocin and that whole process, the hormone cascade, the endorphins that are released, getting into that primal brain kind of thought process. I mean, that's a whole different scenario. Then run into the hospital, hurry up and get your IVs, fill out all your paperwork, do all this stuff.
Yeah.
Nurses is coming in all the time. The monitor's going off all the time. It's like apples and oranges.
Yeah,
so
when you're
in a setting, you know, headed up by a midwife who's experienced and can, and your body's naturally going into labor on its own, it's just a totally different scenario.
Oh, and then the lovely enema.
Right.
That's mostly been phased out by most
has
of the
it really?
Places I know. But interestingly... Yeah, and there was some reports, even one of the hospitals here in town a couple years back had an unpublished C-section rate of almost 50-60%. So that's can be pretty astounding.
Yeah, and I've delivered, my wife and I have delivered babies at both Covenant and UMC and had great experiences, and we're not here to bash, you know, any of the nurses, doctors, any of that at all. That's not... What we're trying to expose here is that the whole system, just like we do every week on this show, this is a system-wide problem. The way we're programmed and trained, and someone would say brainwashed, but just the way we are, as doctors, is we're trained to deliver care, is not the most optimal way, the most beneficial and healthy way to go. You know, I was just looking up a study. I'd read this a few years ago out of England. Oxford University published a study, and based off the study's results, the national healthcare system in England recommended that uncomplicated pregnancies be done at home. That 45% of uncomplicated of pregnancies in general are uncomplicated, and they should be with a midwife at home. That was the national mm-hmm. recommendation from the national healthcare guys over in England because of the decreased complication rate. And again, going back to this is just a natural process. The body knows how to do what it needs to do, and the midwives are trained to just be there and assist the natural process, not speed it up, not hijack it, not start it early out of convenience. I had a patient last week who her OB said, well, your baby's going to be too big, you're not going to be able to deliver this baby.
That
was based off a guesstimation from mm-hmm. a late ultrasound. So they went ahead and set an inducement date and induced her. So her body wasn't prepared, her womb, her cervix, her pelvis, the ligaments, all that was not prepared properly like it naturally would have been. So she had a very long, hard synthetic pitocin-induced labor, and it was just excruciating. And she tore. She had a grade 3 or grade 4 tear.
It's almost like it sets them up for failure.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. It's almost impossible to have a natural, normal, uncomplicated delivery if you're going to induce. The baby turned out to be 7 pounds and a few ounces, so not too big. My wife's last baby was almost 10 pounds, and she did it all naturally with no epidural or anything else.
Oh.
But that was the doctor's guesstimation. This baby's going to be too big. You're not going to be able to birth it, and that's what I'm talking about.
That's exactly what happened.
These are just opinions that aren't supported by facts. And that fear-based kind of attitude, patients just go right along with that. But your chance of complication, your chance of bad things happening, go up a whole lot when you're induced. So at the very minimum, I want to encourage women to get educated, learn about this natural birthing process, and even, if you're going to use a hospital and an OB, a traditional OB, that's great, but set up a birthing plan and talk to your OB about that and have certain guidelines going into it that I'm only going to be induced or have a cesarean for this particular reason. Get educated about it.
Are you finding mothers older? I mean, what's like the oldest mom?
More women are choosing to get an education first before heading towards the childbearing years, and there are women that are delivering up into their 40s, 42, 45. I do accept private clients with, I've started a small birthing center, and like in my protocols, I accept women up to 42. After that, the risk of complications can start to go up. So maybe that's not the best setting for them is at a hospital. But women can get pregnant until they go through menopause, and the median age of menopause in this country is 52. So now that's not as common by any means, but right. I think the oldest mother I ever saw was 47.
Wow.
And she was having twins, which your tendency to have twins does go up once you hit 40 or so. You start releasing more than one egg at once.
I wonder why
more often. Yeah.
So, Christine, currently, women, if they come see you, what does that look like? You mentioned you have a birthing center.
Yeah, it's just a really small birthing center. It's licensed through the Texas Department of State Health Services. It's actually in back of our private property in town, or actually outside of town. We're outside city limits. But, care with me just is essentially comprised of, number one, making sure that you're an eligible candidate for care, because again, not everybody is, but the majority of women are. And so then it's prenatal care follows the same basic frequency as the standard, where you come and see me, your provider, every 4 to 5 weeks till you're about 28 weeks, then it's every 2 weeks. And then once you hit 36 weeks, then it's weekly until delivery. Now, of course, if something else is going on, then it might be more or less, more frequent or additional visits. But, and I'm not I'm all for I'm all for having the ultrasound for women for the anatomy scan when baby is around 20, 22 weeks, because they can look for different congenital malformations. But ultimately, the patient has the right, the client has the right to turn that down as well. Interestingly, most women, even when we think we're 100% sure of our LMP, our last menstrual period, studies have also shown that that hasn't been quite as accurate. So I also do advocate for an early dating ultrasound, just because it will tend to verify or validate what the dating is. And, it seems that everything in pregnancy is based on dating, of when you draw specific labs or different milestones. So,
all right. Again, I just want to encourage everyone that, the rest of the country, even the rest of the state, is well into utilization of midwives. There's waiting lists at the birthing centers in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and down in Houston. And out here in West Texas, we barely even know what they are. So it's time to open up our minds to this way of natural childbirth. and having midwives assist you in that process. So I would encourage people to just get educated, learn more about what all midwives have to offer, and specifically Christine. Christine, any closing comments, thoughts, or how to get in touch with you if someone wants to do that?
Well, just to, you know, reiterate, just, you know, even a lot of specialists have advocated that if we in this country could extend more midwife services and demedicalize births, that in the U.S. it's proposed that anywhere from 13 to 20 billion would be saved a year, in regard to health care. And, you know, for a hospital birth, just vaginal, uncomplicated, minus provider fees, it's roughly 7,000, give or take. So then you add in the provider fees of a couple more thousand, and then you add in maybe something goes wrong, because it's almost like a, you know, you set this ball in motion where things start kind of just spinning out of control. You start one intervention that leads to another, and then you get an epidural. And when you get an epidural, then it is harder for the muscles in the pelvic floor and in the body to help ideally and adequately help rotate baby to the most ideal position for birthing. So then other complications can tend to happen, and then, you know, C-section rates can go up. But if more women were made aware of just what the options were, then money could be saved all around the
insurance
spectrum.
Pay so for midwife or with free
midwife care, yeah. And currently I'm at an out of network with insurance. It's kind of hard to get in network. Mm-hmm. But whatever the out-of-network rate is for all insurances is what would be covered with me. And then I also offer a self-pay rate. And unfortunately, I am not able to accept Medicaid at this time. It's kind of difficult to be able to do that. But, you know, I mean, if you have any interest in getting a hold of me, the best way, I have a website, thebirthingspot.com, or you can email at thebirthingspot@gmail.com. Phone numbers also, the 806 area code 3448 CNM. That's for Certified Nurse Midwife. So,
well, great. Thank you, Christine. Appreciate you coming on and educating our listeners. Thank you for all you're doing for moms and babies out there. And next week we'll have Nelson Coulter part two. So y'all join us next week. Thank you, Wade, for having us.
You bet. Christine. Thank you, Christine. Welcome. Christine, sure. Stewart, everybody, sure. A certified nurse midwife right here on You're the Cure. Check out VeritasMedical.com, VeritasMedical.com.